to begin this morning with the debate over whether artificial intelligence has a place in the field of medicine. Like it or not, it's already being used in a lot of ways, like detecting rare genetic disorders, helping ALS patients speak, and even diagnosing some potentially deadly diseases.
Programs are learning to answer patients' medical questions and diagnose illnesses, but there's still some problems to be worked out.
Can it really replace your psychiatrist or doctor?
Doctors in family medicine, pediatrics, and internal medicine say they are, guess what, burned out. A big pain point, according to many, filling out medical records, where now there is an AI app for that.
I'm Matthew Handley. AI in healthcare is here, and today on the Flatlining podcast, we're talking to Dr. Matthew Stevens, a radiologist who has a background in computer sciences. He's going to explain to us how AI is transforming radiology. This is the Flatlining Podcast from Fulcrum Strategies. Joining me right now is Dr. Matthew Stevens. He's a board-certified radiologist at Radiology of Indiana. He completed his medical degree at the Indiana University School of Medicine and completed a fellowship in medical informatics from the Regenstief Institute in Indianapolis. He also has a master's in science and computer science from Purdue University. Dr. Stevens, it's good to make your acquaintance. Welcome to the Flatlining Podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Looking forward to talking to you guys.
Also with us is our president and CEO, Ron Howergan. Ron, hello.
Good morning.
Dr. Stevens, I want to start by talking a little bit of background, get to know you a little better. So my first question is, as it pretty much always is when we have another physician on the program, is what got you interested into medicine in particular?
I would say probably my dad was a physician. He was an oncologist for 30 years up in Muncie, Indiana. I think seeing him being a physician and taking care of patients, I think definitely is something that influenced me as far as having an interest in medicine and science in general. And so I had kind of a roundabout way of getting to medical school. I first kind of went through, did the pre-med classes down at Indiana University, but then started taking some computer science classes kind of at the end of my 4 years, and decided I would go and get a master's in computer science and see what that led to first. So I actually went ahead and got a master's in computer science and actually worked for 3 years as a programmer for the Center for Medical Genomics down at Indiana University for about 3 years before finally transitioning into medicine. And I think I really kind of wanted to do medicine at that point, because I kind of wanted more of a personal interaction, where you just didn't have that a lot with programming and research type positions.
Tell me a little bit about what got you interested in radiology, because starting for me, it's interesting that you had that roundabout way of getting into medicine in general. But what about radiology?
Well, I've always been very good at pattern recognition. And looking at things visually and being able to understand things in a visual way. And so radiology just really came naturally to me. So when I read studies or see things, I can kind of put it in my head and kind of three dimensions and kind of know what I'm looking for pretty quickly. So I'm very good at picking up patterns and figuring those things out. And I just found that that came the most natural to me as far as being able to help patients and picking up on imaging findings and conveying those in a concise way where physicians can take advantage of it.
You know, we were talking just before we got started about how we're impressed with particularly those that read MRIs, that, you know, they're sitting there scrolling through hundreds of images there in a minute. And they could pick the one that has the problem in it. And that truly is a talent. Tell me a little bit about how health informatics and computer science has influenced the actual practice of medicine for you.
I think it gives you kind of a appreciation for how the workflow has changed in medicine over time. I think, you know, if I looked at my dad practicing medicine, I mean, he was using paper charts. And so it was much more walking in and then being efficient at scribbling down your notes, dictating into a microphone and having somebody else translate it for you. Basically, there was a lot more probably secretarial type work that was going on to kind of convey what you were trying to get across. Information probably flowed a little slower. So people, you know, if he basically saw a patient and came up with a dictation, maybe the referring physician didn't get it for weeks or months. And so I think the overall pace of taking care of patients was a lot slower. Mm-hmm. I think what a lot of the informatics has done is it's kind of standardized how we relay all this information and allows us to work at a much quicker pace. So I'd say probably physicians are seeing a lot more patients than they used to. They're seeing them at a much quicker rate. And then patients are getting the results a lot quicker too than what they did in the past. And so there's kind of almost like an instant gratification now in medicine that probably wasn't there before. So when you go and get your CT scan or your MRI done, you know, you're getting your results in 1 or 2 days. And it's basically being emailed to you, or you're getting on your medical record and seeing what they are. Mm-hmm. None of that was possible, you know, 20 or 30 years ago,
right?
Before all the standardization and putting things into, in a standardized workflow, where information can basically flow from one hospital system to another very quickly. That just didn't exist.
I want to switch gears a little bit now and talk about what we wanted to have you on today to discuss, and that is AI in radiology and in medicine. With your understanding of computer science, can you give us, because I'm assuming you've got probably an interest in this, but given how it's affecting your field right now, give us a little bit of a primer on where we are with AI and medicine.
Yeah, so artificial intelligence, I mean, that's something that I studied when I was doing my master's, and also, you know, it was heavily used in genomics type research, I mean, even back 20 or 30 years ago. And the ideas behind artificial intelligence aren't new. They've been around for a long time. And they basically deal with automating computers to basically detect patterns and data. I mean, that's basically the primary thing they do. What's kind of different is in the last 10 or 12 years, they figured out how to take some of these models that already existed, like neural networks, and learned how to make them more efficient. So, you know, theoretically, neural networks can identify or learn any pattern that you give it. If you have the right data, you have examples of, you know, a data going in and data going out, it basically can learn any pattern that you want it to. One of the things that kind of held it back, though, is it was computationally very expensive. And so the more complex the pattern was, the bigger your model needed to be. And what happened was, is we figured out a way to kind of take the neural networks and create them kind of stacked one on top of the other, what's called a deep neural network. And they learned how to train those more efficiently by using GPUs, which are kind of parallel processors. So they basically can run all these computations in parallel, speeding up the computation much, much quicker than it used to be. And so that really sped up the training of these artificial or these pattern recognition type algorithms. And then another thing that happened, particularly in our field in radiology, is they came up with something called a convolution neural network. And so the idea behind that is back before this was invented, there was a whole branch of computer science where people would just make research papers on doing convolutions, which are basically computational, computations on an image that would basically transform them into a different type of image. So you could like take an image and multiply it by like a 3x3 matrix, and then you get like just the linear lines of that image. And so they would basically do a sequence of linear, or basically a sequence of convolutions to come up with a, yeah, there's a circle in this image. But that was, you can imagine that was very time consuming and took a lot of thought. What they did was they put the convolutions in the neural network themselves. And now they basically automate finding the convolutions that matter, to find patterns in images. And so that kind of breakthrough allowed for much, much better image recognition as far as, you know, you give it examples of images and say, this is a dog or this is a cat. It's much, much better now at finding the dog and the cat than it used to be, because it's using convolutions now in addition to the neural networks, which made it much better than it used to be. So I think the accuracy before the convolution neural network was well below like maybe 70 to 80%. And then after convolution neural networks, it jumped up to be well above 95%. Now I think they're, some of the challenges are up to 99%. So it just was a big breakthrough in terms of how to approach image recognition and finding patterns in images. And so you can imagine in radiology, that's something that is very exciting, because we deal with a lot of images, and those images often have patterns that you're recognizing. And so a lot of our work that we do is repetitive and tedious. And this technology gives us the opportunity to potentially automate some of that, those patterns in the imaging that are very repetitive, but still need to be characterized and put in reports, because they can be clinically significant, even though most of the time they aren't clinically significant. They still need to be characterized in the rare instance that they can be potentially clinically significant. So by using this technology, the hope is that a lot of that can be automated and become more efficient and allow the radiologists to read more studies and concentrate on the things that aren't common or aren't or have a very variable appearance that these algorithms may not be very good at detecting. And so I think our workflow will gradually change over time because of the technology.
I want to talk about some specific examples now. I've read about how this imaging technology that you've been discussing has been used to work to look at abnormalities in CT scans and reviewing mammograms. But I know that you can't use it for some other things like looking at certain chest X-rays. And so I'm curious if you could provide some examples of medical examples of things that it can catch versus things that it can't catch.
Yeah. So I think it all comes down to accuracy, right? I mean, it can catch something, it can catch about anything that you put in front of it. If you have an example or enough examples that kind of look the same, right? Mm-hmm. Because all it is a statistical model kind of encompassing kind of the variation of the finding. So the more common something is, and the more the less variation it has in its appearance, the more likely it is that the algorithms are going to work to a high degree of accuracy. So like if you're going to identify like a piece of anatomy, like say the aorta, the aorta, is usually a circle. There's not a lot of variability for anatomic piece like an aorta. So if you wanted to quantify the amount of an aorta or basically identify it and characterize it, that's something you can definitely do with the technology. So simply because it's very common. It's something that looks the same in most cases. I mean, it may change in the size of the diameter or change in, you know, some characteristics, but by and large, most aortas look alike. So they're going to be, you can identify them. Something like a pulmonary nodule is something that you can definitely use this technology to identify. So the pulmonary nodule, you know, has a very distinct appearance on a chest radiograph. It has a relatively high degree of variability, but in the context of the common anatomy in the lung, it kind of sticks out. So given enough examples, given enough variation, you're going to be able to identify the nodules on a chest CT. Now, as far as mammography goes, I mean, obviously breast cancer is highly variable in appearance. And what the radiologist does for breast cancer is he's characterizing things based on common patterns and using a common nomenclature called BI-RADS. And even if you're using BI-RADS, it's not going to be 100% accurate. So really all you're trying to do with mammography and these algorithms is make it as good, if not better, than what the radiologist already does. Simply because radiography and those things have a lot of overlap, a lot of variability, and it's very hard to be 100% accurate on them. Even for a radiologist to read a chest X-ray or a mammogram, it's not going to be 100% accurate. Just by its nature, you just can't know every single variability that could indicate a cancer. Just because, especially when it's everything superimposed, like they are on mammogram or a chest radiograph. So those things, you know, the algorithms can still work to some extent, but the accuracy is going to be limited, just like it's limited for the radiologist. Mm-hmm. Things like bone fractures, they have very similar appearance. So those, you know, automatically detecting bone fractures would be something that the algorithms would probably work very well on. You have things like intracranial hemorrhage, which has a very distinct appearance, not too much variability. So you're probably going to be pretty good at get enough examples of that. You'll probably have a pretty good algorithm for automatically identifying those types of findings. Things that are very rare, patterns that are kind of, I mean, I guess patterns that kind of have multiple findings, I guess is where it's probably going to struggle on, because first you have to make it find the findings, and then you have to have it recognize the findings as a overall diagnostic pattern. I think it's not there yet as far as that goes. So like if you wanted to detect something that requires multiple findings to come up with a diagnosis, it's probably not going to be there at this point.
So Dr. Stevens, this is Ron. And this is all fascinating to me. And maybe this is the fact that I'm older than both, you know, you and Matthew, and I'm a little bit jaded, and I get really sort of concerned about some things. But with AI, I know one of the concerns people have in a lot of areas is it's great if it's a useful tool, but how do we keep it from going too far? You know, and especially in imaging. So here's my question: is like, I like the idea of it being an additional tool for the radiologist, especially with all the information that gets flooded at them. But I worry about the attraction maybe to some people to have it take over. In other words, you know, I know that's the concern is, will it replace the radiologist, or will it start to, you know, to get to that point? And I remember I had a conversation with somebody from a payer once, and they were trying to argue that, well, does every neuro study need to be read by a neuro radiologist? And the payer said, well, you know, the bread and butter stuff, I mean, they can clearly, a general radiologist can clear that, can't they? And I guess my answer to them was, yeah, but how do you know what the bread and butter stuff is? I mean, you know, the neuroradiologist is there for that thing that they go, wait a minute, what is this? You know, that's not obvious. And you talk about things like that are unusual or, you know, rare. And so, I mean, is that a concern of yours in the field that this could go too far? And how do we keep it from finalizing a study and missing? Because it's sort of like that whole, you know, airline thing about, you know, well, you know, a very small percentage of planes crash. Well, if you're on that plane, it's one of one. And if you're that rare person that it misses, so is that a concern of yours? And how do we, from your perspective, how do we keep it from going too far, stepping over that line?
Yeah, I mean, I think as long as you have people who are trained and understand the limitations of the technology, who are basically looking over the studies, I think it can be a useful tool. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if you have no supervision, I think that's not a good idea. I mean, you can't just turn these loose and just say, go at it, you know, mm-hmm. hopefully it'll all work out. These models do change over time. So in other words, as new technology comes available or the radiograph machine changes or the CT scanners change, as things slowly change over time, the models become outdated and need to be retrained or recalibrated. So you're always going to need supervision for them. I think the big time savings from a radiologist perspective is if you have like an algorithm that identifies the pulmonary nodules, characterizes them, and then can automatically put them in your report. And then all you're doing is basically checking to make sure they're not, you know, wrong. I think that's a big time savings for a radiologist. But I still think you have to have somebody checking over it because it can, you know, they're not, like you said, they're not perfect. They can miss. There's no 100%. So if you extrapolate, you know, something even with something like 99%, you know, accuracy, if you extrapolate that over millions of exams, like you said, there's going to be lots of misses. And that's not to say that the radiologists won't miss it too. So you'll still have some things fall through the crack. That happens right, regardless of AI or not. But I do think it has a potential to make us more accurate in some respects and also more efficient. Mm-hmm. But it's still up to the radiologist to have the effort to go through the study and look at it. You can't just totally rely on the algorithm to do your work. You still right, have to go through and look at it. So I do think you still have to have well-trained physicians and radiologists overseeing the studies and making sure that the algorithms are working appropriately and then giving feedback if they're not. But I do think there's some arguments to be made that at some point you will have algorithms that work so well that certain aspects of reading films will be somewhat automated. In other words, knowing that some things are going to be missed. So, for example, I think mammography is one of those fields where you can, you know, start pointing to, look, we can basically get just as good of accuracy as BI-RADS. And so that's the limitation of mammography. We're not going to get everything, but you get a certain percentage, and then that's the way it is. I mean, that's the best we can do with this technology. Yeah. Now, you may develop new technology like, you know, have better MRIs, you know, they have tomography now or for breast. So you're always coming up with new technology that may have better accuracy and better ability to detect breast cancer. So I think those are areas that will always continue to advance. And mammography may be the low end at that point.
So, and Matthew, I apologize for sort of hijacking this. I'm just, but this is hugely fascinating to me. So one more question, then I'll turn it back over to you. But so one of the things, and we had a, our previous podcast, we had a physician that, on, that was talking about burnout and across, and it's a big problem in medicine. And I've heard a lot of folks talk about burnout, especially in radiology. Do you think this could be an area where if it handles, makes you more efficient and handles a lot of the, as you said, the routine sort of mundane stuff, and where radiologists start to look at, you know, just looking at either approving the you know, the models or saying, hey, that this, it didn't figure this out. This is an exception. This is where I want to focus my attention. I guess it's a poor way of saying where the studies you really focusing on were those that absolutely needed your talents because there was something going on there. Do you think that efficiency and that sort of focus it, with the proper use of AI helps with radiology burnout, which I know is a huge problem?
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll definitely make us more efficient and be able to read more exams. But I mean, with that comes, you know, well, you should read more exams, right? So I think a burnout is more of a cultural problem, maybe, mm-hmm. Where you're basically working people to the point of breaking.
Yeah.
I think if you're worried about burnout, more efficient ways to work with burnout would be, you know, having people take breaks, interact with people, kind of be more social at the workplace.
I noticed you laughed after you said take breaks. Like that was something that is unusual in your field right now.
Yeah. Well, a lot of it is. I mean, you have physicians who are seeing 40, 50 patients a day.
Yeah.
I just don't think that's sustainable, regardless of what technology you put in front of them.
Exactly.
I just think, you just sometimes you have to take a breather and be able to interact. I mean, I think a lot of the burnout also comes from the technology in some ways. I worked as, you know, immediate care physician, you know, moonlighting and things like that. I was doing radiology residency and I'd see patients in the immediate care setting. I think a lot of it's just, you know, staring at the computer and clicking on stuff to basically document all the stuff that you're supposed to be doing, I guess, where it's much easier just to go in and talk to the patient and do what you need to do and then get out of the room. And I think that's kind of being lost in some ways because of the technology.
Yeah.
And I think that may contribute to burnout, probably more so than the advantages maybe gained by some of the clicking on the medical records. Right. Now, that being said, I mean, AI has a potential to alleviate some of that, right? I mean, you could imagine a scenario where the physician can go back to just going in and talking to the patient and examining him and that kind of stuff. And then the AI just kind of in the background monitors what you say and documents everything. And so when you step out of the room, it's already been done.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the area we hope we get to. And Matthew, sorry for hijacking you.
No worries.
But this is just really, really fascinating stuff for me.
Yeah, great. Those were great questions. And actually, there were questions I had written down as well that I wanted to make sure I asked Dr. Stevens. I did want to ask about improvements and where we're going from here, because one of the things that interests me a lot about technology is that in a very short span of time, we have had some serious technological advancements. I mean, 15 years ago, I think people forget we didn't have iPhones. And so I'm curious what you think is coming next for AI and AI and radiology in particular, and what you're excited about for what it can do next.
Well, I think the low hanging fruit, I mean, the thing that's going to start happening now is going to be kind of getting, like I said, the real common things that we deal with all the time, like pulmonary nodules or renal lesions or liver lesions, those things kind of being automated and quantitated, and recommendations kind of being automated. So I think those are kind of things that are going to be right on the horizon. I think longer term, you'll have things where you have like the entire report read for you, and you're kind of operating as a second reader, just checking to make sure things are appropriate and correct. And then signing off on it. I think from my perspective, like as a radiology practice, I think long-term it's going to kind of evolve into more like you're operating like a software company in some ways. So the radiologists are reading exams, but you probably need a feedback loop to kind of update the models and create a more accurate model. And as new imaging technology comes online, to create models for the new imaging technology. So I see it kind of evolving into that kind of practice, whether that's going to be like one large company or several companies. I do think it's going to start causing radiology to kind of conglomerate and kind of become bigger and bigger practices simply because of how expensive it is to develop the models and to maintain them. Mm-hmm. So I think it's kind of an interesting place to be. I don't know where it'll necessarily end up, but I think it'll be definitely fascinating. And hopefully it'll improve patients' care and make it so obviously the patient is going to be doing better as far as getting more accurate results and better care.
The last question I've got for you is something, it's a little bit more going back to the kind of personal get to know you kind of stuff. And it's something that we've covered pretty extensively here on the Flatlining podcast. And that's an impending physician shortage in this country. And radiology, we know, is one of those specialties that it could hit the hardest. And so I want to ask you as our kind of closing question, what advice, you know, what kind of things do you have to say to young people who are interested in radiology in particular, or medicine in general?
I would just say, you know, go in it with the idea that you want to help your patients, and know that no matter what, how this technology evolves, you're always going to have a job. You're always going to be able to help people. There's nothing in the horizon that it's going to allow computers to completely take care of people. So I think it's a wonderful profession, something to be involved in, and definitely a fulfilling career. No matter which specialty you pick, it's going to definitely be challenging, and you're going to learn a lot about yourself and how you deal with stress and people in general. And over time, I think it makes you a better person. So I'd say definitely pursue it and keep at it. And hopefully they'll allow more and more people to become physicians who want to become physicians. So there won't be a shortage. So hopefully they can work that out somehow. Yeah.
Well, Dr. Matthew Stevens, I want to thank you very much for your time and joining us here on the Flatlining Podcast and sharing your expertise on radiology and on AI. It's been a great conversation.
Yeah. Thank you. Nice talking to you guys.
Miss an episode of the Flatlining Podcast? Well, now you can read a recap. Just go to flatlining.net and look right there on the homepage every Monday for a written recap on last week's episode.